This episode is brought to you by BuyCostumes.com/audiobooks, where you can save 12% on a brand new whoop-ass costume for that holiday that's right around the corner. That's right, Halloween. Why wait till the last second to go as a businessman when you can go to BuyCostumes.com/audiobooks and choose from costumes like Lady Gaga,
zombies,
comedic,
video games,
sci-fi and horror movies,
plus size,
kids,
adult women,
and adult men. That's right, save 12% on your costume with the coupon code audiobooks, or just go to BuyCostumes.com/audiobooks and get your costume today. Email that coupon code to all your friends to help support this podcast, and now on with the show. Welcome to Ancestor, a free serialized audiobook written and performed by New York Times bestselling author Scott Sigler. For more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. This audiobook is intended for mature audiences only. It contains harsh language, adult situations, and lots of violence. So if you're easily offended, I would turn it off now, pussy! Oh, hello. I didn't see you there. Clearly, you've been listening for my voice. Forgive me if I sound overconfident, but I can't blame you. And if it's a little hot in here, feel free to lose some of those clothes. Yeah. All right, whether you found that disturbing or sexy, I want you to know I'm very happy that hot weather is cooling off, and I am settling in for a long autumn full of writing. Working on Pandemic with a one-day break here and there to mix things up and work on the All-Pro so I don't kind of dive into that deep rabbit hole and write a bunch of copy that I'm not going to use because it's just too damn detailed. It's working out so far. It's keeping me nice and fresh, so fresh and so clean. And at least as far as I can tell, there are no triangles working their way over into the All-Pro. I'm also finishing up work on the Starter audiobook, and it does look like the audiobook and the ebook are both going to be available for purchase sometime around December 1st, and that is also true for The Rookie. Remember that the Starter podcast will not begin until February of 2011, so if you want to get the book early, you're going to be able to get the paid download of the Starter, and I'm very excited that A. Kovacs, the director of Doom, is going to have the Starter and the Rookie ebooks up for sale, Kindle, Nook, iPad, EPUB, all the different formats. A lot of people want these books for their e-reader, and we at Dark Overlord Media try to do what you ask. Except, you know, for when you're begging for your life. No, please don't kill me. No, I have a family. Except for that, we try and do what you want. The Starter and the Rookie can still be purchased at Amazon.com and at scottsigler.com/thestarter. We've only got a couple of hundred copies left of The Rookie of that 3,000 copy, hardcover, signed and numbered limited edition run. So if you don't get yours, I really don't want to see emails from you guys 6 months from now going, The Rookie is so expensive. It's like $400 online. Because I get those for Earthcore and the original edition of Ancestor. I probably get those emails at least once a week. Once a book is out of print and it's in the aftermarket, I have absolutely zero control over the price or availability. After this episode, I will have 23 new junkie shoutouts, and I will have a promo for the novel Toothless by J.P. Moore, published by Dragon Moon Press, and that is coming out this month. It is a Halloween release. It is a zombie apocalypse tale, so stay tuned till the end of the podcast for the promo if you want to know more about that. That's my 4 minutes of fury. Let me jump into the story so far, and then we will dive headlong into Ancestor, episode number 21. The story so far. Dr. Liu Xiandan's symptoms of psychosis have grown worse, prompting Janata project manager PJ Colding to search for answers. Jian is suffering from nightmares and hallucinations, symptoms that precede her known pattern of suicide attempts. Colding needs answers before it's too late. The explosive growth rate of the ancestor fetuses is starting to alarm the Janata scientists. The fetuses are bigger than growth projections suggest, but just how much bigger? And how big might they be at birth? And now, Ancestor, episode number 21.
November 24th. You understand. Implantation plus 15 days. The snow had not come with a big gale force storm, but it most certainly had come. An inch here, another two overnight there, usually light, but fairly steady over the past weeks. Only now did Colding really notice the accumulation of a half foot of snow that covered everything. And still the flakes came. He stood at the water's edge, watching Klaus Ruhmkorff try to skip stones. Above and behind them stretched the mansion's sprawling back porch. In front of them, water, whitecaps, and Horsehead Rock. Ruhmkorff picked up a flat stone from the water's edge. It slipped out of his mitten-covered hand twice before he held it firmly enough to throw. The rock skipped once before plunging into a 3-foot wave. "Need flatter water for that," Colding said. "Now you're a physicist? Come on, Doc, talk to me. We need to help Jean." Ruhmkorff shrugged. "Pressure and stress exacerbate her symptoms, and we're under the gun, as they say. There's only so much we can do for her." "That's a cop-out answer, and you know it." Ruhmkorff kept staring out at the water, seeming to focus on Horsehead Rock some 200 yards from shore. "She was fine for months," Colding said. "Now she's struggling, hallucinating. We have to stop it before she tries to kill herself again." "I increased her dosage." Ruhmkorff tried to pick up another rock, but it kept falling out of his oversized black knit mittens. He gave up after the third try, stood straight, and stared out at the choppy water. Something was wrong here. Ruhmkorff was the visionary, the planner, but nothing in this project happened without John's genius. And yet, Doc didn't seem remotely concerned that her biochemistry had changed, that he might have to scramble to find a new medicine that worked. "I'll bring in someone else if I have to," Colding said. "Another physician who can help her." Ruhmkorff suddenly shifted into a visible state of anxiety just a few degrees below panic. "If you bring another doctor out here or take her to the mainland, the Americans might find us and shut us down." Colding held up both gloved hands, palms up. "If you can't help her, what do you want me to do?" "Do your job," Ruhmkorff shouted. "Keep us safe. Keep us secret until I finish my work. Jean's job is to help me create the ancestor, something that she's doing exceedingly well right now. So maybe we just need to take the good with the bad." The prick didn't give a rat's ass about Jean. All he cared about was the experiment. "You're a medical doctor," Colding said. "You're supposed to help people." "That is exactly what I'm doing, helping millions of them. Haven't you noticed, PJ, that when she gets like this, she is at her most brilliant? It's for the greater good. You, of all people, should understand that." Colding stared down at the little man, the cold forgotten for the moment. Realization set in. Ruhmkorff wasn't concerned about finding a new medicine because he knew the current medicine would work just fine if she got the proper dose. "You motherfucker," Colding said. "You shorted her meds." Ruhmkorff shrugged and again looked out at Horsehead Rock. Suddenly, it was hard to think. Colding wanted to kick Ruhmkorff right in the teeth. "How long has this been going on?"
5 weeks. Had to be done, and it worked. You understand.
Colding snapped out his left hand and grabbed the back of Ruhmkorff's neck, squeezed it tight as he pulled the smaller man close.
"Don't you touch!"
Ruhmkorff couldn't finish his sentence because Colding's right hand locked on Ruhmkorff's throat, pressing down on the Adam's apple. Ruhmkorff's gloved fingers tried to pry the hands away, but couldn't find purchase. Another memory flashed in Colding's mind, this time of Magnus, back on Baffin Island, squeezing just a little bit harder to get Andy to stop struggling. Colding's hands tightened. He also gave one short shake, bobbling Ruhmkorff's head. Eyes wide with terror, looking up through glasses knocked askew, Ruhmkorff stopped moving.
"Fix it," Colding said, "or I'll fix you."
He pushed Ruhmkorff away a little too hard. The man stumbled and fell, skidding across the snow-covered sand. Hand on the ground behind him, he looked up at Colding. Colding suddenly saw the scene through Ruhmkorff's eyes. A bigger man, a stronger man, towering over him, ready to hurt. Sanity snapped back into place, and with it, deep embarrassment.
Klaus, I...
Stay away, Ruhmkorff said.
I'll correct a medication. Just stay away from me.
He scrambled to his feet and ran for the steps to the mansion, giving Colding a wide berth as he passed. Colding didn't know what bothered him more, that he'd flipped out and put his hands on Ruhmkorff, or that for a brief instant, he'd used Magnus Paglione as a template for proper behavior. Fuck, he said. He waited a few seconds to give Ruhmkorff plenty of room, then walked toward the steps that would take him up to the mansion. He'd check in on Jean, then go find Sarah. November 25th. Stupid cow. Implantation plus 16 days. At 3 in the morning, Jean found herself alone in the C5's upper deck lab. She blinked and looked at the work log she'd called up on her computer. It couldn't be. But there it was. The keystroke log didn't lie. She'd just done a protein analysis. The results had looked familiar. Now she knew why. She had done the same analysis yesterday and the day before, but she didn't remember doing either of them. She called up more logs, looking at her work. Some things she remembered doing, some she did not. Maybe it was the lack of sleep. She couldn't even manage 20 minutes of sleep before the mishmash animal of her dreams came for her. Dr. Ruhmkorff had brought her meds today, not Mr. Feely. Ruhmkorff said he had made an adjustment. It would take a little while for her body to acclimate. 3 days, maybe four, to get back to normal, he had said. She'd start feeling a little better as early as tomorrow. And when she did feel better, could she please, please, please make sure she told Mr. Colding? She knew she wouldn't feel better. Dr. Ruhmkorff was lying. Everyone lied to her. But the numbers didn't lie. Maybe her failure caused the dreams, the spiders, the rats, the mishmash, the numbers. Movement on her left. She turned and took a step back all at the same time, then felt a dribble of pee trickle hot down her leg. An orange spider. Big as her whole head, staring at her. Jean's hand shot to the desktop, where she'd left her Dr. Pepper. She grabbed and threw all in one motion, the open bottle trailing brown and white froth as it shot toward the corner. The spider scrambled out of the way as the plastic bottle hit the floor and spun, spraying the area.
Sokai! Jean screamed. Sokai!
The spider was gone. Must have slipped into a crack or something, even though she couldn't see a crack. Damn spiders. The numbers. She had to fix the numbers. Fix the numbers so the ancestors would come out right. But ancestors for people parts? That was it. How could they expect to produce an animal with transplantable organs out of a cow? She could fix it. She could fix it all, make the whole project work. They just needed a different kind of host. She put on gloves, then opened the liquid nitrogen container. She carefully pulled out sample trays and set them aside until she found the one she wanted. The one nobody else knew about. She put the other trays back inside, then carried her special sample to the elevator and descended to the empty lower deck. Some of the cows were asleep. The ones that were awake watched her. Sir Moose-a-Lot had an orange rat on his head. It didn't seem to notice that the rat was gnawing on a black and white ear, red blood spilling down the cow's big flat cheek. The cow just stared at her, oblivious. Stupid cow. Jean quietly walked down the center aisle, trying to ignore several sets of cow eyes that followed her motion. She opened the storage cabinets in Mr. Feely's area. There, a sterile envelope that had what she needed. A catheter that looked like a thin turkey baster. Jean grabbed the catheter package. She placed it and the sample tray on the lab table. Embryo transfer in most in vitro procedures was done by a doctor and guided by ultrasound. Ultrasound would take an extra set of hands. Jean did not have an extra set of hands. Too bad the orange spiders couldn't help. They had lots of hands. She'd be on her back, but doing it herself would only take about 5 minutes. And besides, they were her eggs. She could do whatever she wanted with them. November 25th, a valid concern. Implantation plus 16 days. Klaus Ruhmkorff sat at the ultrasound station, waiting for Tim to finish running the transducer across Molly McButter's belly. Klaus had taken a liking to Molly, but that was simply because the cow showed above-average intelligence. And he liked the way she nuzzled against his chest when he scratched her ear, but only, of course, when no one else in the lab was looking. Jean, thank God, was looking better already. She'd even combed her hair. 2 more days, 3 at the most, she'd be back to her normal, far less creative self. That was okay, though, because they were in the home stretch. No question anymore. The ancestors would live to term, and all data indicated they would walk on their own. That asshole Colding, manhandling him like that. How dare he? And yet, Colding had been right, at least somewhat. If Jean killed herself, that didn't help the project. With the most significant problem behind them, Klaus could afford to be gracious and correct her meds. She still threw darting glances into the corners, but he estimated that behavior would vanish by the end of the day. The progress bar filled up. A gold-hued picture flared to life. Heilige Scheiße, he said, the words out of his mouth before he knew it. Baby McButter had come a long way from its start as a microscopic ball of undifferentiated cells. If Klaus hadn't known better, he would have estimated the creature up on the screen to be 4 or 5 months along, not 2 weeks. Jean stared at the picture. She shook her head as if to clear it, then stared at it again.
There has to be a mistake, she said. That fetus is at least 100 pounds.
More, Tim said as he came out of Molly McButter's stall.
Try 130.
No, Jean said. Programs say ancestors should be no more than 40 pounds right now.
Your program versus a scale, Tim said. I think the scale wins, Fruit Loops.
Stop with the names, Klaus said, feeling odd about his instant defense of Jean.
I don't care about Jean's bullshit program, Tim said. Look at the damn readouts. Well over 100 pounds in 2 weeks. Nothing grows that fast. Not an elephant, not nothing.
Klaus marveled at the life he'd created. The back legs looked much thicker than he'd theorized. The front legs looked strong as well, but were skinnier and longer than the back. That would suggest a creature that moved at somewhat of an angle, like a gorilla on all fours, as opposed to horizontally, like a running dog or a tiger. The skeletal structure also showed remarkable growth. The ribs looked very thick and extended from the head all the way down to the hips, growing against one another, almost like a kind of internal armor.
Doc, Tim said, what are we going to do?
We observe and document, Klaus said. We prepare for a C-section in a week. Maybe less.
That's not what I mean, dude. Based on the growth patterns thus far, in another week these bitches could hit 300 pounds.
Ruhmkorff nodded.
True. And adult weight could reach 400, maybe 500 pounds.
You're right. The organs might be too large. We'll adjust the genome for the second generation. But right away, we can use livers, maybe even kidneys.
Tim's face wrinkled up as if he were looking at a very, very stupid person.
What? Klaus said. Now what is your problem? I'm not talking about transplants and organs, you fucking nerd.
Tim looked at Jean.
You know what I'm talking about, Fruity Pebbles?
Mr. Feely, Klaus said, I'm not going to tell you again.
Predators, Jean said. Teeth, claws, maybe 300 pounds at birth, possibly twice that size within days. Where will we put them? What will we feed them?
Klaus looked at her blankly, then turned to stare at the workstation's gold-tinted screen. He used the trackball to turn the fetal image, looking at it from every possible angle. Teeth, claws, muscle, aggression, attacking the camera, killing while still inside the womb.
"Perhaps," he said quietly, "that is a valid concern."
November 26th. Checkmate. Implantation, plus 17 days. Colding stared at the chessboard and contemplated his next move. He couldn't screw it up, because he was winning. He was actually beating Jean. No one in the project had ever beaten her. Okay, maybe her brain was still a bit addled from the med shorting, but Colding would take a victory over her any way he could get it. He had avoided Sarah as much as possible in the last 2 days. After, of course, he'd gone to her room and broken the cameras there. He didn't quite know how to tell her that Andy the asshole Crossweight had a video of her, naked, making love. He explained his distance by telling Sarah that he had to focus on Jean, that he'd been slacking off more than a little on that part of his job. Sarah understood. And he wasn't lying, because he did focus on Jean, monitoring her progress, making sure Ruhmkorff gave the proper dosage. That, and playing a lot of chess. Colding moved his queen's knight and smiled. Check. Jean stared blankly out the lounge's picture window. She seemed to have forgotten Colding was even there at all. She looked much better, though. Clearly, the proper dosage was working. Jean? She just sat there, her hands turning a bottle of Dr. Pepper over and over, until the color was a light brown. The normal dark caramel shade mixed with the white of bubbles seeking escape against the bottle's pressure. When she finally opened it, Colding thought, the thing would explode. "Hey, kiddo, pay attention. You're in check." She glanced at the board, then went back to turning the Dr. Pepper bottle. "Jean, talk to me. What's eating at you?" She looked at him, her eyes once again focused.
"It is too big."
"I know, it's okay. Gary Detweiler's getting material for heavy cages. We'll have them up in a few days. Doc tells me that will keep the animals under control." She laughed.
"Dr. Ruhmkorff wants to see his name on the cover of Time magazine. He would risk all of us."
Colding thought of the shorted meds. Jean was more right than she knew. He also thought of the cages and of a tiny, camera-biting fetus enlarged to 200 pounds. Or even bigger. Ruhmkorff had assured him that everything would be fine, but the man's statements were questionable at best. If Jean was worried, then Colding was worried. "Why are the fetuses so much bigger than you thought they would be?" She looked down. The bottle turned faster.
I made projections, but maybe I was not thinking clearly."
Not thinking clearly. He thought about the timeline. She'd had her breakthrough, created the successful batch right when they left Baffin 3 weeks ago. 2 weeks after Ruhmkorff started shorting her meds. "Jean, I need you to think. You said you coded for a herd animal. Docile, about 200 pounds adult weight. But it's not just the size of the ancestors, it's the aggressive behavior. Those teeth." She raised her head, looked him in the eyes. He couldn't quite read her expression. On her face he saw doubt, confusion.
"I thought I programmed for a herbivore, but it is predator."
"No shit, Sherlock. Herbivores didn't eat each other in the womb." If Janata had more time, more resources, Colding could just scrap this round of fetuses and have Jean start over. Magnus, however, wasn't going to let that happen.
"I want to leave," she said suddenly. "I want to leave this place. Something bad is going to happen unless we stop it. We need to call someone."
Colding's breath caught in his throat. He automatically looked at the camera in the upper corner. Gunther was in the security room. Did he see Colding and Jean in here? There was no sound, but Colding had also thought there was no video capture in Sarah's room. Who knew what else he was wrong about? If Magnus found out Jean was talking about leaving, what would he do?
"Jean, don't say that again.
Don't you even think about saying anything like that to anyone. You understand?
But Mr. Colding, I am afraid that I...
Her voice trailed off. These half sentences of yours are really annoying, John. Just tell me. She looked at the chess piece in her hand and said nothing.
Jean, just tell me. What are you afraid of?
Her eyes narrowed. Something was going on in that brilliant head of hers, but what?
I did things I do not remember doing, she said. I think that I will look at code again, see what I can find.
She set down her rook in a new space that blocked his check. Colding smiled and started to move his knight into attack position, when he saw that by moving her rook, she had put his king in check with her bishop.
Checkmate in 2 moves, John said absently.
Fuck, Colding said. The bottle spun even faster. Without another word, she stood and walked out of the office.
There you have it, Junkies Ancestor, episode number 21. Now, I told you I would have new Junkie shoutouts, and damn it, that's exactly what I've got. 23 of them, actually, of people who have signed up with profiles over at scottsigler.com, which makes them infinitely cool and really kind of sexy. People like the Canadian, Little Boy Blue, or from Indonesia, Sir Winger, or from the UK, Richard, which sounds nothing fecking like Harry Potter. From the United States of America, The Common Cold, Puggerel 02, Bastard Kitty, Drogan, Dorothy 521, Joe Die, Cranial Wrench, Shandle, Shonix, Shirlet, D-Wolf 909 New Animal Mother, Mumo Killowee's Bitch, Fuzzy Bunny Girl, J.M. Houston 1, R.W. Brown 29, and Chelsea Dagger 7. The new Junkie shoutouts are prepared by the Evil Queen, and this week her favorite new Junkie name is Moom O'Killowee's Bitch, and who can blame her? That's just a good one. Speaking of Moom O'Killowee and the Galactic Football League, go take a look at podcastjunk.com/GFL if you want to see all the latest and greatest in Kraken's gear, including hats, shirts, tees, jerseys, etc. And those are NFL quality football jerseys, which is kind of why they're so effing expensive. But you can get your own number and your own name on the back of them, or the number and name of a character, whatever the hell you want. Don't forget our sponsor, buycostumes.com/audiobooks, or just go to buycostumes.com and use the checkout coupon code audiobooks to save 12% on your order. And whether you buy or not, remember at all times emailing any of the advertiser coupon codes to friends and family. That is a fantastic way to promote this podcast, keep this sumbitch free, and to spread the word of Siglerism. I now leave you with the promo for the novel Toothless by J.P. Moore, and I will talk to you all real soon.
In 2009, novelist J.P. Moore gathered thousands of fans with a podcast that took the zombie apocalypse where it had never gone before. In 2010, Toothless rises again. France, 1180 AD. In life, he was Martin, a father, a husband, a knight. In death, he is Toothless, warrior servant to an ancient demonic evil. But life is not done with him yet. This Halloween, the podcast sensation Toothless by J.P. Moore.
You have been listening to Ancestor by Scott Sigler. This novel is available in print from Crown Publishing in bookstores everywhere. To order online from Amazon.com or other retailers, visit scottsigler.com/ancestor. Ancestor was directed by Fred Sanders and recorded at Books on Tape Studios in Los Angeles, California. This podcast is produced by the A-Team of Ariok Morningstar and A. Kovacs. More information and more free audiobooks available at scottsigler.com.
Theme music is the song Forever Infinity by the band In This Moment.